So about 6 weeks ago, I came up with the sermon title, the topic, as those who run the newsletter demand that I do. And my normal process is to cook the sermon, chop up the ingredients, kind of let it simmer until it's time to sit down and put it, if not to paper, at least to electrons on my computer before printing it and then rendering it as an outline. And I take this process seriously and really enjoy it. And I came home Friday filled with enthusiasm about this. And then I opened up my mail and got out Quest, the Church of the Larger Fellowship of the Unitarian Universalist Association. And I found the headline article by our president, Reverend Peter Morales, Religion Beyond Belief. It's my sermon. Now, I could read it to you because it really is my sermon. I could have changed the topic, but then that would have been bait and switch. So any similarities are purely coincidental because Peter and I have the truth and we're giving it to the world. Actually, that is not the message of the sermon, mine or his. What we agree on, and he used the word belief and I used the word faith, and he goes as far as to say belief is the enemy of religion. And he points out correctly, I see you tilting your head, he points out correctly that classically religion wasn't about what you believed. That's right. It was about what you did. It was about how you acted. It was, good or bad, about rules and not simply about belief. In fact, in early religions, and actually jumping over Christianity for a moment, in Judaism, there is no word for religion. And the emphasis on in classical Judaism was not about what you believed about God, because God was, in a sense, unknowable. There's also no word in Hebrew for theology, because God, however you imagine or experience God, is not definable by words or by any ologies. It is experience. And God is made manifest when you follow commandments, when you do good deeds, when you practice love. The same is true, incidentally, in Islam. In Islam, the word for religion, deen, is the word for law. It's what you do. You start with the assumption that God is indivisible, and reality is indivisible, and we're all part of one. But there really is not a tradition of ology. It's a tradition of practice. You practice your faith, and if you say words, they are to remind you how to be and not to remind you how simply to believe. All of this started to get mixed up, and I've talked about this before occasionally, through the influence of the Greeks. And the word that was used and translated as faith, pistos, actually means knowledge. But what happened in the early church is that there were fights over doctrine, theology, and Christology. Who is God? What is God? What does God want? Where did God come from? Where is God going? Is the universe infinite in time and space, or is this just a geocentric world where we are all down here and God is watching us happily? And then, why is God the way God is? Hence the theology. If God is all powerful and bad things happen to good people, we need an explanation, which means we have to explain God's motives and motivation. This was a new development. And what happened was, in some ways, we, and Reverend Morales and I agree, we took, historically, our eyes off of the prize of how to be as opposed to what to believe. We made it religion that was about God or about Jesus, and then we decided to fight about it. Because we can fight about doctrine and belief and faith really easily, because there are no objective criteria. You are a heretic. I can tell just by looking at you that you don't believe as I do. You're okay, but I'm watching you. Because when you make it invisible criteria about what it is that you believe, when you make it about doctrine instead of about what we do, how we love, how we are in the world, then we have a test with no real criteria except I can read your mind and your heart and your soul, and if I really want your house, I just denounce you as a heretic. If I want your shop, I denounce you as a heretic. If I want your wife, I denounce you as a heretic. And that is what happens when religion becomes about doctrine as opposed to about action. Doctrines, at their best, are supposed to remind us how to be, as opposed to what to believe. Now, most of the real fights used doctrine as an excuse, as the causes belli. It wasn't the real reason for the fights. The real reason for the fights was, I want your house, I want your shop, I want your wife, I want control. In the early church, before Nicaea, in 324, 325 of the Common Era, there were fights about theology and Christology. People were organizing and killing each other over whether God was one or two or three, and what was the relationship of the triune God, and whether Jesus was exactly the same as God, or just really, really, really similar. And people were ostensibly killing each other over this, but they weren't killing each other over the doctrines. The doctrines were the organizing principle. They were about different schools, different camps, different groups that were trying to grab power and to grab the legacy of the church. Same thing happened in Islam. The Sunni and the Shia, who are fighting even unto this day, right now, they are divided very narrowly in terms of doctrine. The Sunni believe that the legacy of Muhammad should be passed down through what is a divine democracy, that the leader is chosen more or less from the tribe of the prophet, but chosen like a pope is chosen, by a consensus that is guided by God, but there's no blood test. The Shiites believe that the legacy of Muhammad, the ability to define the community, to interpret the law, comes through the bloodline of the prophet, through his son-in-law, nephew, Ali, who was martyred, and through Ali's two sons, Hussein and Hassan, who were also martyred and in a way died for everyone's sins. These are doctrinal divisions in principle, but in fact, they're about power. They're about who owns the legacy, who gets to interpret the law, who gets to name the Supreme Court of all Islam. And so it is not about how Ali relates theologically and whether it's okay to make a prayer to Ali, which it isn't in Sunni Islam. It kind of is in Shia Islam, and it's required in Alawite branch of Shia Islam. But it's not about how long your trousers are for a man. There's a difference in trouser length, believe it or not, between Sunni and Shia. It's not about whether you pray like this or whether you pray like this. They're not fighting about that. They're fighting about power and tribe and who gets to define the legacy. Even the long-running tragedy of anti-Semitism really isn't at its heart or its heartlessness about theology and Christology. Are we really killing each other over, I think that Jesus is the Son of God versus I think we're all the children of God. I think that Jesus died for our sins. We use lambs and goats and chickens. Versus, I think that Jesus' mother was a virgin. My mother is too. These are the things that we pick to fight about, but they're not the issues. The issues of tribalism and nativism historically make it very clear that it's about power, it's about tribe, it's about ethnicity, and that is our human original sin, that we make these divisions, and the tragedy is compounded, and it's both good news and bad news, because these divisions that we make that are important and death sentences in one generation become non-starters in another generation, and we find new things to be arguing about, to be fighting about, to divide ourselves from each other about. We can't become perfect overnight or over centuries, but we can, and I agree completely with Reverend Morales, we can at least keep our eyes on the prize about what religion is about at its best. It's not about what we say we believe. Anyone that finds comfort, I'm fine. Dennis is sharing about his brother and his brother's faith as exactly on point. I never attempt to get into a theological argument, certainly not with anyone in extremis. If you are finding comfort, if you are finding solace, if you are finding inspiration, you have a responsibility to go where your soul is nourished. Not to go just out of habit of your family or your tribe or your ethnicity. You go where your soul is nourished. And there are so many languages and poetries and music where we try to express our connection to the source of life and meaning, where we try to find ways of sharing our laughter and our tears and finding the inspiration to be not perfect but better in this world. The commandments of all the various scriptures, once you get outside of these doctrinal differences, are very similar. If you are a good Jew or Christian, or Muslim, or Buddhist, or Hindu, and if I'm leaving your, or sky-based, or earth-based, you are responding to the interdependence of human beings, that we understand that we don't have separate fates. We may have separate faiths, and that's fine, but we don't have separate fates. We are, as one of our Unitarian poets pointed out, we are fellow travelers to the grave, and we should not look at others as if they are separate beings on separate journeys. We share the sunlight right now. And the great questions which we must communally answer, as well as personally answer, are not what is God, who is God, what does God want, where did God come from? Did God create the universe because he was lonely and just wanted something to watch? The cable was down. What was the meaning of time before God created the universe or didn't? And where do we go? The great question is, do we recognize that we're here? Do we recognize that we're here only for a while? Do we recognize that what we do here makes a difference to who we are as individuals, as small communities, as families, and as a nation, that our sweat and blood and tears and lives can make a difference? That's why we practice religion. And when it becomes simply about belief and doctrine, it's fun to talk about. It's fun to argue about, but it isn't intrinsically important. Because the foundation of our great faiths is understanding that we are bound together with the potential to truly love one another. And I mean that in the agape, the phile, and the eros sense. That we can feel the chemical connection of one another and a passion for each other's lives. and the connection to each other and the acceptance of each other. Not necessarily uncritically, but the acceptance of one another. There is no one I know who does all of these important practices of religion perfectly. But we come together to remind each other of who we can be, of how we can be, of how we can create more love in this world, and how all of us, every day, have an opportunity to stand on the side of love and to stand against hate and arrogance and condescension, and understand that people of other faith traditions are not primitive, superstitious people. They have other languages and poetry and music that touch and inspire them. It is fair to judge what we do. It is not fair to look inside and to then say, all right, I like you today, you're not a heretic. Brad, you just fell 6 points and you're a heretic. We can't do that. We look at what our hands do. The great religious symbols can be used to wound. You can make a Star of David and you can throw it at somebody. You can make a cross and use it as a sword. You can take the elements of any faith and misuse them. You can take the doctrines and theologies of any faith and misuse them. Our purpose is to find the good, the true for us, and the nourishing that give us the strength to nourish and to nurture each other.